you're with us for the morning show as we discuss the cash bail system in America and the influx of support for the network of bail bond programs in our country. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So the purpose of cash bail is to prevent defendants from fleeing. It's used as a guarantee that the person will show up for their trial or hearings. But according to the National Partnership for Pretrial Justice, nearly 500,000 people are held in jail before their trials every day, often because they can't afford bail. And the network of community bail funds around the country is a financial resource for people who can't afford to pay their bail. What do you want to know about the cash bail system, the role of bail bondsmen, and efforts for reform? We're at 800-642-1234. Charlene Grace is executive director of the Chicago Community Bond Fund and a regional organizer for the National Bail Fund Network. Charlene, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So give us the nuts and bolts on how the Chicago Community Bond Fund works. What do you do?
Sure. So we do two things. The first is exactly what it sounds like. We run a revolving community bail fund where we pay bond for people who would otherwise be in jail while awaiting trial simply because they and people in their families and communities don't have enough cash to purchase their freedom. So bail is in the picture at a point when everyone is awaiting trial, they're presumed innocent, and in Illinois and in Wisconsin and most other states, the setting of a money bail itself is a release decision by a judge. It's a judge saying, you're free to go. I believe you'll come back. I don't believe you're a safety risk to anyone in the community if you have this certain amount of money. And the second thing that we do at CCBF, which many bail funds do, is we participate in campaigns and system change efforts so that we don't have to purchase people's freedom and to eliminate money bond and to reduce pretrial jailing.
What do you see as wrong with how our cash bail system works in our country?
Sure. So in your intro, for example, you were explaining that the idea behind cash bail or money bail is that it helps people come back to court. But there's actually no evidence that it does that. And there's emerging evidence that it may actually undermine people coming back to court by creating more stability because of the way that policing and criminalization target certain communities, most often Black communities, sometimes other communities of color, poor communities. When people are forced to come up with money bail or their families are forced to come up with money bail, it takes resources out of already disinvested communities that really need that money. And so there are some studies now that are seeing if people are forced to pay money bail, they actually may be more likely to miss court in the future than if they weren't required to pay money, because taking that money is further destabilizing their situation. So what we know is that money bail isn't essential for court appearance. And in many places, it also doesn't release people at all, right? So a significant percentage, if not a significant majority of those almost 500,000 people in jail while awaiting trial around the country are there because they can't come up with a certain amount of money. And what we know in the United States, where we have very different histories among Black communities, white communities, other communities of color in the ability to accumulate wealth, is that relying on money and allowing money to determine who's in jail and who is free is also going to deepen the racism of our criminal legal system and increase the disparities between Black people and white people in particular.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Charlene Grace, who is executive director of the Chicago Community Bond Fund and a regional organizer for the National Bail Fund Network. We're talking about the cash bail system and the role of a network of bail funds to provide the financial resources for defendants who can't afford their bail. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Mike now, joining us from Shell Lake this morning. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I want to say that this is kind of being portrayed as a racial issue, and it really isn't. Now, I'm of no color, and if I were to commit some kind of crime, I'd probably have trouble making bail. Don't commit crimes, you won't have these problems.
Okay, so what Mike is saying is he's not seeing the racial inequities because he said no matter, you know, what background you come from, if you can't afford bail, you can't afford bail. Charlene?
Sure. Certainly there are many people, and I don't know the demographics of Shell Lake either. For all I know, in whatever jail incarcerates people who are arrested in Shell Lake, it could be majority white. The people who are arrested. That depends on the demographics of the surrounding place. It depends on the policing patterns of your community. But what we do know from study after study after study is that Black people and white people who have otherwise similar charges and backgrounds are not treated the same in our criminal legal system, and that includes money bail. So we know that Black people are more likely to be required to pay a money bail. And white people are more likely to be released without having to pay money. And we know that Black people are, on the whole, compared to similarly situated white people, given higher money bonds. Latino people also receive higher bond amounts. So we do know that it is a system that treats people differently because we live in a society that treats people differently. And ultimately, there are individuals making these decisions, and we bring all of the training and the biases and, quite frankly, the racism that we have grown up with in this country with us into courtrooms when we make decisions.
Charlene, I'm wondering if you can explain the role of bail bondsmen and the collateral that they accept and their role in the system.
Sure. So as I understand it, Wisconsin does not have bail bondsmen, and neither does Illinois. And we're one of seven states around the country that don't have a for-profit bail bonds industry. In states that do have that industry, what it often looks like is a private company, the bail bondsman, accepting a percentage of the bond that's set from most likely a family member of the accused individual, not the accused person themselves. And then they keep that as a fee. And so what we know is that it actually can be a very predatory industry. And that while bail bondsmen are often portrayed as small businesses and community members, the majority of the income, the revenue, the sort of wealth that's being built on this industry that really preys on people in desperate situations, preys on mothers, grandmothers, girlfriends, other loved ones trying to get the people they care about out of cages, is that it actually accrues to these national and international insurance companies that underwrite bail bondsmen. And there's a really great report about that from the ACLU and Color of Change and a number of other groups about that issue and how that works.
Charlene Grace heads up the Chicago Community Bond Fund. We're discussing the cash bail system in our country, how it works, and the network of bond funds that are a financial resource for people who don't have money for bail. Have you donated to a bail fund? What motivated you to do so? Have you ever had to bail someone out? What are your thoughts on the cash bail system where you live? Do you think it makes sense? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Charlene Grace here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about our country's cash bail system, the racial inequities of pretrial detention, and then the work of bond funds. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Bail is meant to incentivize people to show up for their trial, but criminal justice reform advocates say that the cash bail system criminalizes poverty. People who are unable to afford bail are detained while they await trial for weeks, maybe months, What do you think about ending cash bail? What would you replace it with? Are you an attorney? What can you say about the system in place? Join in at 800-642-1234. Charlene Grace heads up the Chicago Community Bond Fund. She's our guide. Let's bring in Rich now in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I'm white. My family is white. My nephew, who was arrested in Michigan and served prison time in Michigan, nothing whatsoever to do with drug charges or anything like that. Totally bogus charges that were later overturned, experienced the cash bail system. And I'll tell you, if for a fairly wealthy white Californian whose parents who flew out to try to deal with the system, if they had difficulty with it, you should hear his father and his mother talk about what went on with the bail system and how corrupt it is. People think I'm crazy when I say America never abolished slavery. It simply rebranded it. The cash bail system epitomizes how wealth determines justice in America. Let me tell you that much.
Rich, I think Charlene, Rich's words there would echo what you've been saying.
They would. And Rich, I'm so sorry that happened to your nephew and to your family. And it's a process that happens to a million people every year, millions of people every year. And it's so destructive. And I think what Rich mentioned is really important, that his nephew's charges were ultimately dismissed, and many people's charges are, because it's important for listeners such as the first caller to remember that we're talking about people who have merely been accused of something. And what our system is supposed to do, what it says it does, but has never truly done, and what we would all want if we were accused of a crime, is for it to be very difficult for the government to take away our freedom before we've been convicted of anything. That's why we have due process, and that's why we have trials and the right to a trial, at least in theory. But cash bail subverts all of that, and it actually makes it incredibly easy and arbitrary to lock people up.
Charlene, some people would say that your fund makes our communities unsafe. What is your response?
Sure. What we would say is that if mass incarceration created safety, then the United States would be the safest country in the world. And we're not. And we know that what creates safety is access to resources and social equity and opportunity and all of the resourcing and building up of communities that we have been actually backing away from, especially in major cities and urban environments for decades. And our position is that paying bond for people and getting them out of jail increases community safety, because what can contribute to people being involved in the criminal legal system is lack of stability, lack of opportunity. And if someone had a job and they're arrested and they're stuck in jail because they don't have bail money, that is destabilizing. And most people in jail are not going away forever. They're coming back to our communities, right? Most people aren't even going somewhere else first. They're literally in jail. They leave the jail and they come back. And the question is, do they come back to our communities in a better place? Do they come back faster so they can keep their job, so they can keep their house, so they can keep caring for their children? Do we try to maintain stability and the positive things that people have going on in their lives? Or do we put them in a worse position by leaving them in jail as all those things fall apart?
Charlene Grace is executive director of the Chicago Community Bond Fund. We're talking about the cash bail system and the role of a network of bail funds to provide financial resources for defendants who can't afford bail. Let's bring in Jack now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jack.
Hi there. I really appreciate this conversation. It's a topic that I don't know a lot about. And so kind of I have two questions. One is a cash bail system something that's unique to just the United States, and how we enact that? And also, what would an alternative be to a cash bail system as I don't know of anything else besides the cash bail system. I really appreciate it.
Jack, thanks. Charlene, multiple questions there on how the system started and works.
Yeah, great question. So there are some other countries that use cash bail, but to go back to one of your original questions about the bail bonds industry, I can say that the United States is one of only two countries in the world that allow private companies to play a role in pretrial release in the way that we do. That's the United States and the Philippines. So that is a very rare system for which there's no excuse that we continue to allow that profit motive to determine people's liberty. And overall, what we know is that there are actually places and systems in the United States that don't use money bail. So Washington, D.C. has not used money bail for decades. They have comparable court appearance rates and rearrest rates and in many places, better rates, better success rates than other places that continue to use cash bail. New Jersey effectively eliminated cash bail in 2017 and has seen the number of people in their jails decrease significantly, while the number of people who are rearrested or who miss court is stable from before that when they were using cash bail. And we have other systems, perhaps in our own states. For example, in Illinois, we have a juvenile justice system that's separate from the adult criminal system in which young people are released without ever having to pay money. So we have these systems actually already operating in the United States. And the alternatives are largely to just release people. So in some situations, less is more. The faster that we get people back home, the better their outcomes are in every way, and the better and safer all of our communities are, because the less disruption, the less destabilization that we allow the arrest and prosecution process to enact on people, the better off we are. And then for people who do need support, we can provide that in voluntary and non-punitive ways, right? So when a lot of times people are worried about eliminating money bail with the idea that it will decrease return to court. But what we know is that the vast majority of people go back to court anyway. And then there's a couple other related points. One is that it's rarely the person who's accused who's paying that money. It's very frequently a family member or another loved one. And the second point is the idea is that what motivates them is getting the money back. But in many states where people are using bail bondsmen, that's a fee they paid to a third party. They're never getting that money back anyway. That incentive isn't there. And even in states where there aren't bail bondsmen, it's very frequent that the money is not refunded. So people know it's not coming back and they go to court anyway now. So we don't need to replace that because it's fictitious anyway.
Charlene, before we have to let you go, I want you to talk about the protests against police brutality this summer and in recent months and the attention to bail funds. How have the donations affected the work you do at the Chicago Community Bond Fund?
Sure. Great question. Thank you. So we, like many bail funds around the country, received a huge influx of donations at the end of May, beginning of June, after the police murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others. And that has really enabled us to show up in support of the movement so that people who are risking their safety and well-being to participate in this moment that is forcing this national recognition, this national conversation, are not then stuck in jail because they don't have a certain amount of money. So being able to show up for people arrested in protests and uprising related incidents has been very important across the country. And it's also allowed us to continue to doing that work of freeing people whose cases aren't specifically political.
So what is next for your bond fund? And as you work through the pandemic and the protests, where is your focus?
That's a great question. So with the pandemic ongoing, we continue to monitor the number of people who are in jails in Illinois, particularly Cook County Jail, which is one of the largest jails in the country, and to ensure that as few people are incarcerated there as possible, because we know that jails are inherently unsanitary, inherently unsafe in the context of infectious diseases, especially COVID-19. And the only way to protect people is to get them out of the jail and then to ensure that as few people as possible are in the jail so that there's some semblance of social distancing, which otherwise cannot be practiced in these environments.
Charlene, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Charlene Grace is executive director of the Chicago Community Bond Fund and a national bail fund network organizer. Coming up, we continue the conversation on bail bonds in America with a former public defender and the person who wrote the book on bail funds in Wisconsin, on the bail system in Wisconsin. Do you work in the justice system? What do you think of the cash bail system? What is your position on the bail bond industry? What do you want to know about it? 800-642-1234. Back for more after this news update on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on the cash bail system and the work of these bail funds amid the backdrop of the Black Lives Matter movement. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the summer of protests, bail funds received an outpouring of donations. The Minnesota Freedom Fund said on its site that the money was going towards supporting detained protesters. In the cash bail system, the court determines the amount a person has to pay in order to secure their release from detention. And the cash serves as collateral to ensure the defendant will appear in court for their trial or the hearings. Do you think ending cash bail would endanger the public? How do you want Wisconsin to change its pretrial system? Join in 800-642-1234. Michelle Levine is an Emeritus Distinguished Clinical Professor of Law at the UW Law School. She's co-author of the Wisconsin Bail Manual. She headed the Public Defender Project at UW-Madison and was a public defender for a decade. Michelle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So in your years as a public defender, what did you learn about our state's cash bail system?
Well, we have to take first what I learned as a public defender, which was here in Madison, and then what I have since learned working at UW and working on the bail book, and I'll just merge them together. We have a statute, if anyone's interested, it's Chapter 969 of the Wisconsin Statutes. But really what we have is 72 different bail systems, loosely guided by those statutes, but they are radically different depending on which county you're in. So if I have one big takeaway, that's it.
So when you say it's governed differently in each counties, there is a different approach to bail all over Wisconsin?
Well, they look the same. I mean, there's a basic structure, and they are all governed by 969, which is the statute. But the approach, the presumptions that judges make, the biases, the prejudices, I mean, I can give you a perfect example. There are some counties where being from Milwaukee supposedly makes you a higher risk for non-appearance and you're more likely to get cash bail. But you go to the next county and that's not going to be true.
Do you see fluctuations in how much cash bail is set at?
I see fluctuations in whether cash is set and how much cash is set. And again, that varies from county to county. I mean, in some places, the judges really take seriously the idea that it only has to be that amount that is guaranteed to assure a person's appearance. And other places, it just feels like, although they don't come out and say, this is the kind of cash bail we always get, that's certainly what it feels like.
There's been a lot of attention during the protests on bail funds. What do you think about the role of bail funds in the system?
Well, they are, for the most part, fairly new. Yes, there's a couple of very old ones nationally, but, you know, turning up locally, they are fairly new. They can serve a purpose where, for example, let's just talk about protesters. And those are, you know, the protests, they can be politically charged, and you might find yourself with a lot of protesters in jail on cash bail. They shouldn't be there, but the political nature sort of drives those decisions, and they can be absolutely marvelous. they can be controversial in the sense of, for example, I think it was in Boston where a gentleman had some cash bail. The bail was posted by the bail fund out there, and he was subsequently arrested for a sexual assault, and everyone's saying, everyone got very upset. But that's not the kind of case that should be driving these decisions. Really what the bail fund is an equalizer. And it says these are the kind of people who should be out, but due to a varied circumstances, they're not. And so we're going to ensure they get out.
We're talking with Michelle Levine, who's a former public defender, co-author of the Wisconsin Bail Manual. We're talking about the cash bail system in Wisconsin and inequities that she sees for defendants who can't afford bail. Taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Pat now, joining us from Hartford. Hi, Pat.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a question about how we got here. You know, typically we have an idea, we give it a whirl, some things about it work, some things don't, and then we change it. So there's a history here that I don't know and most people don't. And typically we just make changes without understanding how we got to a place in the first place. So I was just curious how we got here.
Pat wants more historical context and how cash bail became the system in our country, Michelle.
Fantastic question. Thank you. Well, it goes back to the idea of what motivates us. And so cash bail has been around for a long time, especially if you take a look, the Wisconsin Constitution requires release or presumes release. Actually, the federal Constitution presumes release. And so you found judges saying, well, what's going to motivate us? And what legislatures believe motivates us is money. And so when we're talking about cash bail, it's been around certainly as long as I've been alive, the idea of how much money is going to get you here, or what's under the surface, how much money is going to hold you in jail. So to a certain extent, we're a capitalist society. We're driven by money.
Pat, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Greg now in Camp Douglas with thoughts on this. Greg, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This matter is kind of personal to me, as I do have bail money out there in a case. I'm not going to mention what it is, but it seems that the court doesn't really care about the burden that it puts on families when the family is asked to put up a bail. And when it is over, do you get all your money back? Does court costs come out of that bail money? And what about the interest on that money that is sitting in an account for the court somewhere? And in my opinion, I'm 67 years old, and I've dealt with the court systems quite a bit with my kids. And in my experience, it's all about the money. And the court is basically asking, how much is your freedom worth to your family? And if you have a ton of money, it seems like there's no problem. You're good. And if you're poor, well, you might as well give up on it. Mm-hmm. And it also seems like how prominent is your name in the community also has a lot to do with a court's decision, I think. And I'll take my questions, my answers off the air. Thank you very much.
Greg, thank you for your insights and bringing your personal story and perspective here. Michelle, what can you say about Greg's situation and asking some really technical questions, too, on where that money goes?
Right. Well, bail, I'm going to get right to the very technical question of what happens at the end of the case. If the person for whom the bail is posted is convicted, that bail will go to court costs, it will go to fines, it will go to restitution. And I'm assuming that if Greg posted bond, he signed a form that basically says this. I'll be honest, bail's a moneymaker. It is, because it's gone even if you appear. Now, if the charge is dismissed, if the case goes away, the money is returned, but no, there is no interest. This money problem, it's serious. And it's not only the burden that it places on families, and that's if the family can afford it. but we're also looking at the burden that it places on the individual who's sitting in jail on cash bail, convicted of nothing. This person, what we know from research is this person may have lost a job, may have lost housing, will disrupt the family. And so when we talk about risks of bail, those are the risks we don't talk about. The risks of ruining people's lives. People can end up sitting in jail, owing money for bail, unable to pay it for months. One of my friends just tried a case in Milwaukee. The client was found not guilty. The client had sat in jail for 9 months.
What happened to their life in those 9 months, in their personal life?
Right, exactly. You know, any option for a job, gone. Obviously, there's no jail visitation with COVID. So his ability to deal with his family is totally up in the air. Where does this person live? He lives in the jail, and so it affects him. It affects his family, his kids. The ripple effect is huge, and it's something we don't talk about very much.
Something that you do talk about, though, is bail jumping, and in the issues around bail jumping. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. When most people hear the term bail jumping, they think it means that the person didn't appear. And in many states, actually most states, that's actually what it means. It means you didn't show up. Wisconsin, it has a much, much broader definition. So it's a number of things. It means, did you violate the conditions of your bail or your bond, conditions of the bond? And so it's not only did you not show up, but when somebody is released, there's going to be conditions that are going to be put on them, many of which can be quite onerous. They can be quite expensive. And the way the law is here, that if somebody violates a condition of bond, which might be that you don't drink, it might be stay off of a block of a street. There's any number of them. The standard one's going to be don't contact the complaining witness. The state can charge a bail jumping for each violation. And what this has resulted in is stockpiling the numbers of bail jumpings that are put on somebody. So, a typical example. Very often, you have a disorderly conduct, there'll be a complaining witness, and it may be a boyfriend-girlfriend. And these relationships can get very dicey. The girlfriend can end up contacting the boyfriend. You're going back and forth, back and forth.
And we need to pause right there on that example with UW-Madison Emeritus Law Professor Michelle Levine as our guide to the cash bail system and the work of bail funds. You can join in with your insights, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Michelle Levine here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with UW Law School Distinguished Emeritus Professor Michelle Levine. She's a former public defender, and she co-wrote the manual on bail in Wisconsin. We're exploring the cash bail system, efforts to reform it. Some criminal justice researchers have called the system rife with racial inequities. Michelle, getting back for a moment to explain bail jumping here and the loads of misdemeanors that you see build up in certain cases. What's going on?
Well, what's going on can go back to a 1995 case that said that the prosecution can charge a bail jumping for each and every alleged condition violation. And that's how you end up with, very often, people facing more time for bail jumping than for the underlying charge. In fact, very often they can be acquitted of the underlying charge and there's still bail jumping sitting there. The most absurd being a case out of Kenosha where a gentleman was facing 44 counts of bail jumping. Ultimately, it was reduced to 2. But bail jumping is the most charged crime in the state of Wisconsin. And so it does place an extraordinary burden on people because it isn't just about not showing up.
Let's bring in another call now. Chris is in Adams. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I am an elderly disabled white woman. And I was living in a house that was inhabited by a bunch of drug dealers. And I called the police because I was robbed. And they arrested me and charged me with a felony assault that I never committed. And by the time I got this all dug out and got it dismissed, I also was robbed a second time and lost $500. It turns out that the cop and the parole officer for these people were both on the drug take, and we have to investigate the problems involved with the police being corrupt.
Well, and Chris, I want to go back to the point you're making, though, that when you were arrested, you were in jail for 10 days. What was bail, or how did you approach the bail system?
I didn't have any
you
money.
Didn't have, okay.
And you only get one phone call a week. There was no way of my, like, fixing that. I eventually got evicted and because I couldn't pay my rent because I got robbed a second time. They took my checkbook and my cash and
okay.
my wallet out of my purse and took everything.
All right, Chris, thanks. Michelle, this can really make lives chaotic. Unclear about, yeah. you know, Chris's bail situation, but certainly there can be a myriad complications.
It's very, very complicated. I mean, she could have sat for a very long time before bail was even set. And so there could have been 10 days before bail's even set. It shouldn't be that way. It can be, and it is, or bail may have been set before she had a lawyer. And you suddenly find yourself out of money, out of a house, you name it. It is highly disruptive. The interesting thing is these things that really can have catastrophic effects are often taken care of in a hearing that lasts no more than 2 minutes. The best you can say about the bail considerations is that it's perfunctory. And we just, if you go into, especially go into a place like Madison, it just looks like it's a conveyor belt. It's a conveyor belt of human beings.
Michelle Levine is a former public defender, co-author of the Wisconsin Bail Manual. We're talking about the cash bail system, resources for defendants, with your questions as well. Let's bring in Jim now in Van Dyne. Jim, hi.
Good morning. Good morning. Your guest said a little bit ago about the bail system being a money-making proposition, and the caller was asking where that money goes. I simply want to point out that after the actual court costs, all the remainder of all fines and forfeitures in Wisconsin under Article 2 of the state constitution go into the common school fund, and then the net proceeds of the common school fund are distributed once a year per child in Wisconsin schools for the express purpose of purchasing library books. So that's ultimately where the money goes. And just for the record, I think I've been out of school now for about 13 years, but as a school media specialist, I think the number when I left was somewhere around $15 per student per year was what was distributed through the schools. So that's where the money goes after the actual court costs. And I'm not sure what all goes into the court costs, but certainly the upkeep, probably the salaries of the court officials and who knows whatever else, but just for the record.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for bringing that. Michelle, the Common School Fund there, and a media specialist saying, you know, those dollars are getting into schools.
Well, $15 a student, there's not much left by the time it goes through. If you could see what court costs look like, they're extraordinary. They are, it's a lot of money that people end up paying for court costs. The other thing that it goes to is restitution. And we can say that's all fine, but bear in mind, remember the gentleman, Greg from Camp Douglas, saying that he's paid the money. Well, it's his money that's going to the restitution. There's not a lot of money that's going to the libraries. It's sent out, and these counties make a lot of money. Court costs are very, very expensive. And they really, you can look at the statutes and see how much, but hundreds and hundreds of dollars are going to go to court costs. And a lot of those stay in the county. Some go to state criminal justice funds. But in other words, it's an expensive, it's very expensive. And to a certain extent, these are being turned into user fees. And, you know, we can ask, should people who are charged and presumed innocent be charged user fees?
Let's bring in Keisha in Milwaukee with a situation with her son who's 17. Keisha, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me. So, yeah, what I wanted to say was in my issues with the bail system in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I specifically have a 17-year-old son. He went to jail October 25th of 2019. He's a 17-year-old. He turned 17 in there, actually. And he's never been charged with a crime. This is his first time. Again, it's a G felony. His bail is $20,000. We have been to court several times. The judge refused to lower it. He never had any priors. And again, it's a G felony. And that's just, we presented all evidence, like he was in school, he had a job at Walmart and things like that. And they just refused to lower the bail to anything that we can afford. And it's just, it's really frustrating because he's a kid. And again, like, if, you know, check his record, he never did anything. He had a couple of driving tickets. So it's just, you know, I just wanted to chime in and add my frustration with the system in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's very unfair. And I believe it's unfair towards minorities. Like, you ask them to take things on a case-by-case basis. And they sometimes will do that, and they will look into your case and make sure they put things, you know, set things at a bar that you probably can't afford. So.
Keisha, thank you for sharing your personal story. Michelle, what can you say in our limited time?
This is a tough situation, and this is really why the entire system needs to be overhauled, revamped, and taken a look at. Why is her son there? Is that much money necessary? Are we devoting the kind of resources into it to make those kind of decisions? Because he'll have been there almost a year. And it's interesting to know, I'm going to guess that no more in actual court time, no more than minutes have gone into the determination that this 17-year-old should stay in jail for almost a year.
Michelle, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Michelle Levine is an Emeritus Distinguished Clinical Professor of Law at the UW Law School. Earlier, we spoke with Charlene Grace, who heads up the Chicago Community Bond Fund and a National Bail Fund Network organizer. You can listen back to this hour in its entirety. Find it later this morning at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it is 1A. It's the stories that caught your attention. Catch up with the roundtable of the week's news. That is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.